Mr. Clarkson, reel 28.
The officer was taken out of the ship?
Yes. As I say, I didn't get to recommend for promotion that I should have done. That was given to his one of his crawlers, dare I say. But he did keep away from me. I think he must have been told... You see, they were so worried at the time about mutiny and that kind of thing, because the Courageous had a bad name just then.
It was 1933, 32,
32. No, this Courageous, this was 1933.
33.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The previous commander, he had stirred up a mutiny in his other ship. They were a bit worried about it. And there was a lot of... we had then an admiral who came there who was not a very popular admiral. And the ship's company were in a bit of a restless state. And the commander had issued an order that anybody... hearing of any discontent in the ship, hearing any arguments, any bad feeling against the officers or the POs or chiefs from the junior ratings, it was to be reported. And that was what I told the commander at the time. I said, now you have issued these orders that you've got to be informed if there's any discontent that's likely to cause trouble. I said, every time I go in my mess, I hear them talking about this officer concerned. And the actual words are said, as that bastard so-and-so, that bastard this and bastard that. Now, as the senior member of the mess, I said, I think it's my duty to inform you that this is going on. Great discontent over this officer. And that... I suppose the commander must have taken notice of that as well. But otherwise, I would say that the majority of master-at-arms weren't such good fellows. Neither were their regulating petty officers.
What sort of men would you say it was who became... Master at Arms. What sort of man who became ship's police again?
The promotion, it was, was slow, very slow, for leading seamen, POs, and corporals and marines. And so they were the people who normally applied to turn over to crushers, as we call them. Because if a corporal of marines turned over, straight away he was made a petty officer, you see. A seaman's pay, a petty officer's pay was, say, the basic rate was 4 shillings a day, say, for argument's sake. If he had a higher gunnery rating or a higher torpedo rating, that was such as a gunlayer, second class, or a leading torpedo operator, that was worth another shilling a day, which brought his pay up to 5 shillings. Now, otherwise, his pay was 4 shillings a day. Now, if he couldn't get any further, if he couldn't get that higher rating, he was down to the 4 bob. As soon as he turned over to a crusher, he got the same pay as a petty officer with a higher gunner rating. But that wasn't confined to seamen POs. Stoker POs, any corporals and marines, people who weren't successful, say, in their own branch and could see no promotion forthcoming, they could turn over to ship's police because they weren't short. They were usually short of them. Because it was a job that people didn't like, a despicable job, if you like.
In spite of the fact that you could get certain financial gain.
Now then, promotion seemed to be pretty fast in that branch. And so a few years as a regulating PO, and then you were a master at arms. And when you were a master at arms, you had control of the ship's police, all the regulating pit officers, it were. So if you were inclined to be a little bit corrupt, and you usually had plenty of that when you were a regulating PO, you had the opportunity if you didn't take it. But then when you became a master at arms, you were their boss, and so you didn't have the crumbs, you had the cream of anything that was going. It was really a racket. And that's why they weren't so popular. And then if ever you showed signs of trying to battle against them, so you went, you usually lost. A commander had to, we'll say, of a ship, he had to believe somebody, and it paid him to rely on his master at arms.
Could you find weaker commanders and stronger commanders who were less dependent?
Oh, yes.
How would that vary, the relationship between the commander and the master at arms?
Well, there was a lot of them. They were, as I say, they relied on the word of the master at arms. What he said was right and law. On the other hand, things would get to a pitch where the POs would get fed up. Now, it was no use one PO complaining to the commander about the treatment they got from the police staff. It had to be several for it to carry any weight. And then, if it was a good commander, he'd have a bit of inquiry to find out what was going on. He couldn't afford to lose the confidence of his petty officers by giving way to the master at arms every time. So he would more or less meet them halfway and more or less give them a warning as to their future treatment. And that's what happened when I was in the Iron Duke. They got a little bit too cheeky, and the commander eventually put the block on them so that if this one fellow, a regulating petty officer, if he was a little bit junior in service to, we'll say, a seaman petty officer or a cook petty officer, if you like, he wasn't allowed to shout and bawl at him. He had to treat him with a little bit of respect as a senior petty officer. Now, there was an occasion, and I say I was on the Dauntless, and we had a friendly master at arms. And we were at Vancouver, and one night everybody ashore, they'd been to a free dance and quite a nice social entertainment. Some of us, we lived in a hotel, we used paid for that. But the others, the master at arms said he was going to go aboard that night, and it would be in the early hours, I suppose, about 1 o'clock in the morning. And he walked down to the jetty, and there were several more there, half asleep, no boats. Of course, the last boat had gone at 11 o'clock. And he said, "Oh, I'll get a boat," he said. So he walked around the jetty to a Canadian destroyer. Just forget the name of her. The quartermaster was only an able seaman there. And so he said, "We want to borrow your skiff. Call away the skiff." And being spoken to by Master Downs, even though it didn't belong to his ship, he did call away the skiff because he said there's about a dozen of us want to get off. So this destroyer skiff went along to the jetty, picked up the master at arms, and I think it was about 9 of them all together. And off they went in this little outboard skiff off to the Dauntless. Well, on the way in Vancouver, there's always a lot of logs floating around, you know, where the trees come down the river. and the boat ran up over one of these logs, overturned, and they're all in the water. Of course, they heard the cries from this destroyer. On went their searchlights. The dauntless searchlights went on, and away went the boats and picked them up. And our master at arms and our crowd, they were brought back to the ship. Now, the next thing that happened, the following day, there were two caps, HMS Dauntless, on them, floating around the harbour. There were also a seaman and a stoker missing. And they said, now, how many were in the boat? And he couldn't tell them, the master at arms. He was the senior one there. He was the fellow that organised it. And so they got a bit worried. Now, we off we go to Cowichan Bay, and the next thing that happened, we get the news that the two bodies have come to the surface. And so there was a call of inquiry then, and resulted in the fact that any man, it didn't matter, or any petty officer, leading hand, or able seaman, if you like, anybody who was the senior one in the boat, he took charge, not the coxswain. And he had to decide whether there was too many in the boat. If so, get him out of it. Because, do you know, the coxswain of a boat, he was always the kingpin. And if he was only a leading seaman, he used to take charge of POs and chiefs when they were in the boat going ashore or coming off. And our captain, that was John Moore, he said in future that when a boat is going ashore, bringing Liberty men off, the senior men in the boat, whether it's a cook, whether it's a sick bay attendant, or what, if he's the senior one there, he will tell the coxswain when he considers there's enough in the boat and say, shove off, that's all you're going to... And it sounded so nice for some of these people who never had a bit of authority, had this pushed in their hand, and the coxswains of the boats, very often, they didn't like that at all. And they say, I'm in charge of this boat, you do as I tell you, would the senior hand say, you'll shove off. And so that appeared to have been throughout the Navy, that seemed to happen just about that time.
Yes. Can I just ask you, you said that on the Iron Duke, the POs got a bit uppity.
Yes.
What actually caused this? Why did they consider themselves to be ill-treated, or why did they get uppity, or what was this uppity business that you talked about?
For one thing, an RPO, a regulating PO, interfering with a PO's men. Yeah. See, each, perhaps you've got the quarterdeck man, the foretop man, and the main top man, and all those, and they've got a captain, a petty officer, in charge of them. He naturally looks after his own men, and he doesn't want other people to interfere with them. And so, regardless of their feelings, these body snatchers, as we call them, they would go and interfere with people. I've seen it myself. Perhaps you have got a good man on your party, a fellow that you tolerate a certain amount.